This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. I'm your host, Karen Vergara, a senior journalist at Financial Standard. The financial advice industry has experienced seismic shifts in recent years, thanks to regulatory reforms, shifting demographics, and changing consumer expectations. While these changes are reimagining business models and keeping advisors on their toes, the opportunities, though, for the sector are rife. To give a first-hand account of the highs and lows and why the future looks very bright for the sector, we have today joining us Razaya Private Wealth Management founder and principal advisor, Thaborjan Razaya. Thaborjan, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Karen. Great to be here.
Firstly, let's introduce you to our audience. And you work as a financial advisor. So tell us about your business. Why did you start the business?
Yes, we run a financial advice business. We think about financial advice there's so many definitions of what financial advice is, right? And I think that's quite interesting in and of itself. So I can talk to how we think about it. We think about financial advice as helping people live their life according to their values and purpose by helping them make smart decisions with their money. And so for us, absolutely the expertise around money and finance and investments and all the other stuff is relevant. But the impact that we want to have is actually helping people live better lives. And for us, that's a cornerstone of what we do. So that's really critical. I started the business in December 2017. I'd been a partner in a national firm before that for 14 years, and which was great firm, still a good firm. However, at the time, it was just before the Royal Commission, and maybe just my mindset was that there's so much more that can be done. And so scratching that itch of wanting to start something, I actually didn't want to just start something. I was looked at lots of different options of how could we have this impact and do other things, and landed on the taking the chance of, you know, what if we did start something with a blank piece of paper and see if we can redefine financial advice and see if we can do it better. And I think that's what we're living right now, along with many others in the industry who are doing similar things. Yeah.
And just quickly tell us about your clients. Who are they and where are they based?
That's a great question. I think people come to us with needing some help with something. Typically, it's going to be help with something that they can articulate, like investments, retirement, tax, business, etc. A lot of people come looking for, I need to get in control of my financial affairs, or I need to get in control of my financial future and have more confidence in terms of where I'm going. So they're usually the catalyst for why people come and see us. What we do find, though, is that because we can help with all of those things, but we also know that those things are very narrow things generally that people need help with. And where we have found and proven with the clients that we've been helping over the last many years, what we've proven that has the biggest impact in people's lives is not just focusing on those narrow areas, but starting much, much wider and understanding what are the things that are most important in anyone's life. And we know now as well that without those conversations, we would miss the opportunity of having that massive impact. And yes, we can do great tax strategies and retirement and investments, et cetera, and we do that really well. But if we do those in isolation without having that broader conversation about a client's values and purpose, the solutions are less tailor-made, they're less connected with the things that are actually most important to people. And so we do a really good job of we want to understand what those things are that are most important to people. And it actually helps them start thinking about the way they make decisions with money in a far deeper, impactful way. And then allows us to execute and implement the advice that is for the right reasons, in the right manner, with the right risks considered. And that leads to that impactful advice that we get really excited about.
So let's take a step back in time just quickly. And I want to ask you, how have you seen financial advice or the industry change over the last 10 to 20 years?
Oh, I mean, anyone that's been in the industry would know that it's changed so much. I remember first getting into the industry as a graduate, and it was FSR, Financial Services Reform, had just come in. And, you know, I distinctly remember things like going to I won't say which one, but a big dealer group training session. And I remember one of the advisors questioning at the training session and saying, "Oh, I've got these two PDSs. Can't I just ask the client which one they want and they choose it? And why do I need to, you know, give them advice? Why do I need to explain anything?" It was almost like it was very much that sales commission model that that guy was operating under, which was, for me, was shocking. You know, a lot's changed in that time. We've had so many regulatory hurdles. And it's been really challenging. Obviously, we've seen so many advisors, great advisors, have to leave the industry. Unfortunately, it was somewhat needed on a broad base scale to improve, you know, I think improve the professionalism and the standards. But unfortunately, there have been many casualties. And unfortunately, there's, you know, not as much advice available to everyone, which is the challenge people are trying to solve. I think as well, there's been an evolution, you know, probably even going before that, from insurance sales to investment sales, and a shift to advice strategy, strategic advice, goals-based advice. And now some of us are doing values-based advice as well. So that's definitely been an improvement, but there's still pockets of advice, and advice is still, you know, there is quite a bit of sales where people are just an, you know, investment advisor, or just a product advisor, that can still be there. But I think the motivations and the professionalism's definitely there across the board now. So that's a lot of change over the last 20 years for sure.
Now, you gave a really good presentation at the recent FAAA Congress.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to quickly delve into that, because you talked about how the delivery of advice has changed.
There's so many angles to this, Karen. So I guess if we think about what is advice, that is probably the most important starting point. And there are certainly regulatory definitions of advice and different ways that people or advisors or clients define advice. But I think if we think about what consumers ultimately want, they want help with something. And I think as an industry, or as a profession, we still can get caught up in the compliance-driven approach to advice, for good reason, because there are some really important things that we need to do, and that's critical to protect consumers and to provide advice well. But I think it can take over. And I think if we can pause and say, well, what is this person actually needing help with? Then we can genuinely address that. So for example, if a client does not need any sort of product, but we can still help them, then we should be able to do so. But I think in most, I don't know this for a fact, but I think in most advice business models, if an advisor or the firm is not recommending a product, then they might not take them on as a client. And I think that is a massive missed opportunity to help people and to be able to provide advice. And if it's valuable advice, then people will pay for that. So I think people generally think, oh, well, people aren't going to pay for that advice, and then you can't run a business. And we have to run a business, and we have to be able to charge for good work that we do.
Absolutely.
But we've done it and we do it. And I know other advisors that do the same, where a client might need advice on something. It just might not lead to a product outcome, but they can still be helped and we can still deliver them with value. So I think that is that mindset that is different to probably the traditional model. And what that means is that we may not need to, you know, just provide them with an SOA in the most efficient way possible so we can recommend a product. There may be a whole lot of other things that we can actually help people with. And eventually they probably will need an SOA and they probably will need a product because we need to execute things. But we say that as an industry, we're not product driven, but, you know, a lot of firms are still, if the client doesn't have a product, then they wouldn't be a client.
Mm-hmm.
So there's kind of that dichotomy there, which...
Catch 22.
Yeah, that's right.
Within that, trust is a very important thing. Tell us about how important that client engagement is and trust and building those during, you know, the advice delivery process.
I mean, trust is everything, right? It's where we're helping people with money in their lives, and advisors, you know this. So no, all the advisors I know are really good in this area. Trust is everything. And I think what I've learned is the best way to build that trust is to genuinely want to understand what a client needs help with and do whatever we can to support them in that. And sometimes that means saying, yes, I can help you with this part, but not this. Or sometimes it's telling the client, I'm not the best person to look after you and you have other avenues and I can recommend you to another advisor, which we do plenty of. Or I think what you actually need is to review this element of your financial affairs and we're not the best people to do it, but another professional might be. So that's all part of building that trust. But I think that genuine listening to people and understanding what they ultimately want by asking really good questions, I find is the best way to build that trust. But trust is critical. I really believe it's everything.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So 2025 is almost over. And as we look to 2026, what are you most excited about as an advisor for the industry? And in terms of regulation that's coming up next year, what are your thoughts and what are you expecting on that front?
So two things there. Regulation, I've got no idea what to expect. it's such a complicated thing. And I think most players in the sector are trying really hard to find good solutions. And part of that is regulation, which makes things harder. But then part of it is access to advice and cost of advice and quality of advice. So it's a really complicated thing to figure out. And I think what that means is that there's probably going to continue to be, you know, pain in a way for everyone involved, which there has been. It's not easy dealing with all the changes and all the hurdles and costs of running an advice business. Yeah, I mean, ideally it would be much easier and simpler to do, but it is what it is. And so I think as advisors, I don't want to sound flippant about it, but we just have to keep pushing on, pushing forward, delivering great outcomes to clients, making sure that, and I think that's where the opportunity is. I see it for me is that people need advice more than ever. And I truly believe that if we are able to demonstrate value that clients want, and for me, that value goes deeper than just financial value. I think most advisors would acknowledge, and a lot of the studies do say it's about peace of mind, it's about simplicity, it's about helping people achieve the things they want in their lives. Then there's a tremendous amount of value that we deliver to clients. And as long as we are delivering that value, then clients will pay for that. And therefore, we can run good businesses, which allow us to navigate the costs and the hurdles and the regulatory burdens we have. And I think that's probably, for me, the biggest message to advisors is that we do such a great job And we shouldn't be afraid to charge value when clients are willing to pay for it, because it is really valuable. And I think that's the big opportunity, which does make it really exciting. That there's so much that we can help people with, and financial pressures, and all the things that people are trying to navigate these days mean that we can really help people in that space, even if it's to help them get clearer on what is important to them, or what they can achieve and what they can't achieve.
Mm-hmm. Be honest with them, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. We have to. I mean, that's part of building that trust.
Mm-hmm.
But having those really difficult conversations is critical and so much more important.
I can't let you leave without asking about the fallout of First Guardian Shield and how that has impacted you. How do you think that the entire financial services ecosystem can be improved going forward, or, you know, taking into account these, I guess, few bad eggs in the industry?
Yeah, it's such a disappointing thing, isn't it?
Mm.
My heart breaks when I think about the number of people that have been impacted by it. And we've certainly helped people that have been impacted just to sort of help them figure out and navigate the complexities of what they're meant to do. You know, a lot of it pro bono, just to support
wow.
these people. It's so, you know, it's another version of what Storm or Dixon's or some of those other ones. And yeah, I'm pretty passionate about it. And I think that as a broad sector, we have to do far better generally. And when I say that, it's not advisors that, you know, 99% of advisors weren't involved, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're wearing the cost through CSLR,
yep.
which if we say, well, the advice sector had something to do with it, then advisors should be footing some of the bill. Okay, I kind of get that, even if we had nothing to do with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and you do get dodgy people in every industry, and
mm-hmm.
maybe we can't stop that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The thing that frustrates me, and I think the opportunity for the sector, is where are the gatekeepers and who are the gatekeepers? And are the gatekeepers fulfilling their roles? And I guess if you look at something like Shield and First Guardian, and I'm no expert in this whatsoever, but if you look at all the layers of gatekeepers, they were failures at many levels.
Yeah.
And everyone's quick to defend themselves, but
mm-hmm.
yes, the advisors who recommended it shouldn't have recommended it, right? So that's one layer. The licensee that was supervising the advisors, if they were supervising the advisors, then they would have picked up that the advisors were doing the wrong thing, right?
Yep.
So there was a failure at that level.
Mm-hmm.
If and then you've got the products themselves. So I think ASIC has an obligation to register any MAS. So the registration of it isn't the issue, but there are companies that do research on products. And
mm-hmm.
so if they do research, then I would have thought research would pick up on issues in a product.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly that didn't happen. And then I don't know if there's layers with auditors and things like
absolutely,
that. I mean, who audits these companies?
Yes.
Or do they just tick the box and go, yep, that's fine?
Yeah, and the platforms as well, they would have seen a massive spike in all this money going into this one product. Like, that wasn't a red flag, right?
I mean, with the platforms, I'm not an expert on it, so I don't know what the legal
mm-hmm.
or ethical or governance requirements are
mm-hmm.
by the platforms. If they have a responsibility to make sure that any product that's on their platform meet certain hurdles, then yes, they failed that.
Yeah.
But I'm not clear on whether that is the case. And I think it's probably a grey area depending on whether they're a responsible entity or whether they're just a platform. So this is where I'm out of my depth.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some pretty obvious ones. Advice, definitely. So advisors that were recommending them didn't know the product well enough. The licensee wasn't supervising the advisors.
Mm.
That's pretty clear. And the research houses were rating products that were obviously had issues with them. And I'm sure there's a whole lot of other layers where there were things missed. So my question generally would be, are people doing their jobs?
Exactly. Right? Simple as that.
I mean, we all have jobs to do. And like we said, 99% of advisors didn't get caught up in it. So advisors, 99% of advisors did their jobs. That 1% didn't. Mm-hmm. So, but as a sector, like, we've just got to be better. I know that advisors, and I've done this, when we see something dodgy, we report it. But does anything happen? Does it happen quick enough? So, yeah, and it's a challenging one because a lot of people say, oh, but then you don't have innovation in the industry and the investment world, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? I don't care that much about innovation when people are going to lose millions and millions of dollars. And we're talking about livelihoods here. So
absolutely.
You got to protect consumers at the end of the day. And I think that that's shown to not happen in this instance.
Absolutely, that did not happen. Yeah.
Mm.
I'm going to give you an opportunity to give a plug to the profession and to those considering, you know, financial advice as a profession to a young one or those who are considering a career change. What would you say to them to encourage them to come try out the industry, learn more about it? What advice would you give to these people?
Now, I'm obviously biased, but I think it's an amazing profession. And it's genuinely a profession now more than an industry. The biggest reason I can point to as to why you'd want to be an advisor or work in financial advice is that we are having a massive impact in people's lives. I mean, apart from the health sector, and when I say the health sector, I'm talking about, you know, the real leading edge of, you know, surgeons and people that are saving lives type thing. The next most important thing that people worry about is their money, and it touches everything that they do in their lives. And we know that we're not, as humans, we're not good at managing money the same way that we're not generally good at managing our health.
True. Very true.
So the benefits that we can provide to people by supporting them to make smarter decisions with their money so they can live better lives is massive. And the satisfaction that you get from being able to genuinely help people, you know, for me, that's the biggest reason to get into financial advice. There's definitely other things. I mean, I'm a finance, math, science background. Done lots and lots of studies, and there's interesting work. There's interesting work to be done. It's not rocket science, but there is really interesting work to be done in advice. So, and there's different avenues you can go into in advice as well. There's so many different roles that can appeal to people. But as an advisor, it can, you know, the work is really interesting. Problem solving, navigating complex situations for people as well, as you know, while helping them at the same time. And the third thing I'd say is that it is hard, but I mean, I think every job worth doing is hard.
Mm-hmm.
The industry's gone through a lot of challenges, but again, the opportunities are there. Like we said, if there's half the number of advisors than there were 5 years ago and people need advice more than ever, then as a business or as an individual wanting to earn money in, you know, doing a job, there's opportunity, and it's a beautiful intersection, you know, where you can work in a business where your craft is in high demand, where there's a great need, and you can genuinely help people and make a difference in the world. So the job satisfaction is, you know, amazing as well. So there might be a bit of work up front, a bit of study that needs to be done, and professional years and a bunch of things, which again, I think for some people they find that a bit a challenge, thinking, oh, I've got to do all this extra stuff. But, you know, if anything's worth doing, it can't be too easy.
Yeah.
For me, the payoff's definitely there for all of those reasons.
Before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to share with us? any other comments you'd like to provide?
I think generally, again, I think it's a great industry that we're in. I think for advisors out there, there are a lot of advisors doing it tough. And I just want to say to all those advisors, you know, keep doing what you're doing. If you need help, reach out to others in the industry. There are plenty of us that are willing to help. I'm no expert, but if anyone wanted to chat or wanted to reach out, happy to connect, happy to share what we're doing. And I think that's something that I've really enjoyed, is with having good people in the industry. You know, we're willing to share with each other, help each other to be better overall, so we can help more people. And so I think, yeah, that's probably one message, because I'm hearing that some people are doing it pretty tough with everything going on. So yeah, you know, look after each other, care for each other, and we'll all be better off for it.
Awesome. Thaborjan, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Great to be on, Karen. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.